Good evening. This is Terry Coop, host of the Blue Plate Special, and on the menu tonight is mystery writer Loretta Ross. She's the author of the Auction Block Mystery Series, where she puts her degree in art history and archaeology from the University of Missouri to good use. She also adds a lot of local color and locales to her books, and that's some of what we're going to talk about tonight. Loretta, are you there?
I'm here. Hello.
Good to talk to you. It's a real pleasure.
It's good to talk to you.
Am I correct in calling your books the Auction Block series?
Yes.
Then why don't you tell me what that's about?
The name? The Auction Block series?
Yes.
Well, Rin, the female main character, is an auctioneer. So,
and what's
the publisher?
And what's her name?
Rin Morgan.
Okay.
And our publisher at Midnight Ink Books decided to highlight that with the name of the series. We went through a whole list they had me send in as suggestions, and that was the one they picked out of the suggestions.
What were some of the other suggestions?
I was thinking the Rin Morgan mysteries, like, you know, the Nancy Drew mysteries and the Trixie Belden mysteries, something like that line. And they considered that, but they already have, M.C. Beaton has a series, and the name is flown off the top of my head right now. But they decided that Auction Block would be better. I'm not really sure. Are you there?
Oh, yes, I'm here. I'm just listening to you.
I'm hearing a weird noise over the headset. I was afraid you'd been kidnapped by aliens or something.
What? That happens once, and everybody thinks it happens all the time. I mean, geez, really? Well, let's start out a little bit with your first book, Death and the Redheaded Woman. Who is the redheaded woman?
That would be Rin.
Okay.
Rin Morgan, the auctioneer. In the beginning of the book, she's preparing a house for auction, and when she goes in, she finds a naked dead man on the stairs. And he turns out to be tied to a case that is being pursued by my male main character, whose name actually looks like Death, but it's pronounced Deeth, and that's Deeth Bogart. And he's a disabled Marine combat vet who is unable to continue as a Marine, or his backup careers when he went into the Marines, he thought if he didn't stay a Marine for life, he would become a cop or a firefighter. But his injuries in action have made both of those.
So now, your books are classified often as cozy mysteries. Do you agree with that? Even though there's a naked dead guy in the first scene.
You know, one of my big brothers refused to read it because of the naked dead guy. I was like, you know, I'm 50, right? I think they're either cozies or maybe something like more traditional mysteries. They're very much character-oriented and puzzle, you know, mystery-oriented, the what happened and why. There's not a lot of tension. There's not a lot of gore or violence. There's only a very little sex, and pretty much only in the first book. So I think they fit in the cozy genre.
That makes sense. So more like a little bit more like an Agatha Christie type.
Yeah, I don't like to compare myself to Agatha Christie. It feels really, really egotistical. But
go ahead.
To say that we're chased Agatha Christie, Marjorie Allingham, Dorothy Sayers, I've always really enjoyed that genre of mystery as a reader. So I think that influences what you write.
Do you read Denise Swanson?
I'm sorry, the what?
Denise Swanson?
I'm not familiar with that name, no.
Well, your books have actually been kind of compared to hers. And one in your when Booklist did the starred review, they said fans of small town cozies, especially those by Denise Swanson, will love this.
I always try not to look too close at the reviews because they scare me.
Well, with reviews like yours, you need to look at them. They're wonderful. Your books are books are very, very well received. So after what comes after Death and the Redheaded Woman? Are you there? Loretta, are you there? Or are we having some technical difficulties? It happens. Sometimes a stack full of plates comes out of the kitchen and it gets dropped. So let's see if we can get Loretta reconnected here. Are you back?
I am back. Hello.
Excellent. Hello.
I don't know what happened.
It happens.
My phone hung up on you.
As I told everyone, sometimes a stack of plates comes out of the kitchen and it gets dropped. We just have to fix it. I was about to ask you, what's the next book in the series after Death and the Redheaded Woman?
The second book is Deetha and the Brewmaster's Widow. In the first book, we found out that Dee's brother, Randy, was a firefighter in St. Louis who died in the line of duty. And he was killed in a fire in an old brewery that was known locally as the Brewmaster's Widow. And at the end of the first book, we learn that there are some things about Randy's death that don't add up. So in the second book, Dee and Wren go to St. Louis and try to figure out what exactly happened to Randy.
And you say St. Louis. Let's look into that. Where do you live or about whereabouts?
I live in rural Henry County. This is probably part of the reason we're having trouble with the phones. I live on a hill in the middle of nowhere.
And you're
in Missouri. About 100 miles south of Kansas City. So St. Louis is about 300 miles away.
And you make use of Missouri locales, correct?
Yes, I do. My main location is a fictional town I made up. Obviously, it's fictional. I made it up. Named after a park in Warsaw. And it's set in a fictional county that I named after the historic name of the county I live in, which is Henry County.
Great. So what's the name of this town?
Oh, East Bledsoe Ferry.
Okay. And whereabouts roughly in Missouri would that be?
About 100 miles south of Kansas City.
Wait, that's where I live. I live 100 miles south of Kansas City.
I know. You live on the other side of the state line in Kansas. We don't live too far apart.
So all of this mayhem is going on just across the border?
Pretty much, yeah. Our border's seen a lot of mayhem, though.
This is true. And you said, too, your degree is in art history and archaeology from University of Missouri. Am I right?
Yes, that's right. Many, many long years ago.
How much does your art history and everything factor into your books?
I was probably not really mature when I went to college, and I was looking for something different to do, and I chose archaeology, which is a fascinating, fascinating subject that you have to travel to actually make a living at, and traveling is not something I'm good at. So I wound up not really using it in the traditional archaeology sense, but at the same time, it gave me a really broad view of the world and our history and the way that people interact with each other and have for thousands of years. And I think that helps. And occasionally I'll throw some random thing in about a statue or something because I know those things. I know a lot of strange things that that don't come into play in regular life.
So they find your their way into your books?
Some of them do, yeah. Well, the book I'm working on now, which would be the fifth book in the series, you know me. I'm a huge baseball fan. I'm incorporating baseball in the fifth book. So hang on.
I've got to quit being surprised here for just, it's going to take me a second to pull together here. Because I happen to know you are like the biggest Royals fan on the face of the planet.
Pretty close, yeah.
So that World Series thing was kind of important to you, right?
Yeah. That was pretty awesome.
And I just want to contradict something you said earlier about traveling. You traveled just fine. You went all the way to Bowsherkon, Raleigh, which is where we actually met the first time. That was quite a trip.
You know, I made it all the way there from Clinton, Missouri to Raleigh, North Carolina without getting lost, which I don't know if Janet is listening to this or when she listens to this, she's going to be shaking her head and because she knows that I went the first time I met Janet. Did I ever tell you about that?
No.
The first time I met Janet was the year that BoucherCon was in St. Louis. And I didn't actually attend BoucherCon that year, but I drove over just to meet her. And like I said, it's like 300 miles, right? But I hate driving on interstates. So I mapped out this route that would avoid the interstates. And the first road I came to, it involved a dirt road that connected two little highways, and there was a bridge out, and it went downhill from there. It wound up taking me more than 6 hours, and I kept calling her from the car going, okay, I think I'm getting closer. And I finally wound up in downtown St. Louis, and I did not realize, because I was using an old-school paper map, I didn't realize that the road I was planning to follow down to downtown St. Louis was an interstate, and it didn't actually connect with the road that I needed to turn off on. So yes. I'm going and I see a sign, and it's pouring rain, and I'm going through where there's overpasses, and it rains really hard, and then it stops, and it rains, and it stops. And I saw a big sign that said Last Missouri Exit, so I freaked out and took it. And it landed me on a street that I was familiar with it was the name of a Civil War prison, the largest military prison in the Midwest during the Civil War. And I was so happy to see a familiar street that it didn't even occur to me to look for the big curvy thing on the sky that was skyline that was like a block from her hotel. And I turned entirely the wrong way and got lost again in downtown St. Louis and wound up in the parking lot of an abandoned brewery that years later when I wrote Deep in the Brewmaster's Widow, that served as the inspiration for that brewery.
I am envisioning
and then I tried
to, I'm envisioning
and then I tried
lost
to find
in St. Louis and not being able to find the arch.
and then I was trying to find my way back to the hotel using my old school paper map. And it said if I drove on a certain road, it would take me straight down to the road that her hotel was on. Only there was a big building in the way. The road didn't go. The map showed it going through, but in real life, there was a big brick building there, and not a new brick building. There was a building that had been there for like 100 years. So I finally found my way around that, and I got stuck in some little backwater where get off the interstate, and there was a closed factory that had a loading ramp, and I got turned around there, and I finally found my way to the hotel and had to deal with a parking garage for the first time in my life. And I made the mistake of asking very nice security guard at the parking lot which way the hotel was, and the short version of the directions was go left and walk for a block. But his version took like 20 minutes and involved every single crack in the sidewalk. And I finally got there and I had my map and my purse and I was like, I got lost. I'm looking. She's like, what in the hell is this? Like, haven't you ever heard of GPS? Like, it's a map. She's like from the Stone Age.
Well, hey, I use maps too. So, And just to, for the listeners to know, we're talking about Janet Reed, your agent. And
yes,
that
I'm
was the
sorry,
first time.
Yes.
The first time. Well, you and I know who Janet is, but not everybody might.
Right. I'm sure
once she got done being flabbergasted, she thought it was the funniest thing in the world.
I think she still laughs at me about it. But I made it to Raleigh without getting lost. And I got to Raleigh.
You even made it to Raleigh where the bridge was out at Cairo. You made it through that obnoxious detour. I know it's obnoxious.
And you know what happened as soon as I got to Raleigh?
What?
I got lost.
Well, of course you did.
I was on an interstate, like going around the outside of Raleigh, mm-hmm. and it was under construction, and it was rush hour, and I was freaking out because we're doing 70 with cars about 3 inches away from me on either side, and the road's like boobada, boobada, boobada. And so I took the first exit. But then I'm like, okay, I'm going to be smart about this because I need to go downtown, and that's where the tall buildings are, right? I learned my lesson with the big curvy arch thing. So I follow the big tall buildings, and I'm driving around downtown, and just absolute luck, I drive right past my hotel. But it's a divided street, and I'm on the wrong side.
Well, of course
I'm like,
you are.
Okay, I'm smart. I am going to go past this big intersection I can see up here and go under that overpass, and I'm going to take the first little street on the left that I can turn into and go around the block and come back on the right side of the street, right?
Right.
It was an on-ramp. It took me another hour and a half to find my way back to the hotel.
Oh, bless your heart. I'm sorry. It's only funny now when it's a couple of years
I know my way around. I know my way around Raleigh now.
Definitely.
I may never go there again, but I know my way around. And they say pecan funny. They're like, yeah, it's down on Pecan Street. And they think I say pecan funny, which obviously they're wrong.
Well, of course.
But I did discover, as you know, I discovered flying for the first time this year.
What?
Or last year. I flew for the first time.
Excellent.
I've flown twice now. I went to NOLA, to BoucherCon mm-hmm. in New Orleans, and then I went to Malice Domestic in Washington, and I flew both of those. I had never been in a plane before in my life.
Did you have a good time
really,
in NOLA?
I did. We missed you, though.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I had a blast there. It's really hot, and it smells like fish, but other than those two things, it was awesome.
Are you going to Toronto this year?
I'm not. I would like to, but it's just a little too far, and I'm trying to buy a car, so you know how that goes.
Definitely. So. Well, next summer is Florida, and I am going to be there with bells on, and you need to be there too.
I'm planning on it.
Excellent. Because we're probably going to be broadcasting live from there at least once. And it's
we'll
just going
to
be...
We'll have to... Can you imagine the things we can get up to in Florida?
Oh,
There's a lot of crazy stuff that comes out of Florida, and you put the two of us in there with... Not even to mention your friends. I guess we're not going to talk about your shenanigans in Raleigh, huh? Probably.
Oh, which one? About the room of requirement upstairs? Hey, the key worked. So we used it. We used it as a party room. Like that one, you blame that one on Sarah. Man, I didn't do any of that. I just went along for the ride on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But now.
And you totally didn't disrupt the chocolate tasting either, from what I heard.
Oh, no, not a bit. The chocolate tasting was insane. Absolutely freaking insane. We had a good time at that one. That was when we started chanting, give us chocolate. In the hallway. There were a couple of hundred of us chanting.
Yeah, I never drink, right? But in New Orleans, it's kind of, there's like a legal requirement. You have to drink while you're down there. And I was hanging out with, I don't know if you know Lily Mars. If you don't, I have to introduce you.
Mm-hmm.
I have to introduce you. And I can't think of her name. She's for Facebook friends. The three of us were hanging out, and we were at this huge old theater where they had the Anthony Awards.
Yes.
And it was gorgeous, and they had an open bar. So we were drinking a little. And afterwards, I went ahead and went back to the hotel, and I was listening to the baseball game and sitting in the spinny chair. And it was about the most fun I've ever had, was being half drunk and sitting in a spinny chair, even though we blew the lead and lost. But
well, we'll work on that half drunk thing in Florida. Now, back to you. You have more books.
I have more books. I have one more that's out.
Actually, it's Death and the Brewmaster's Widow, not Death.
Name, but nobody ever knows that until they read one of the books. And then the third book is Death and the Gravedigger's Angel.
Okay, so what's that one about?
That one, Wren is preparing this huge old house for auction, and she finds a sketchbook that's full of studies for a larger work, and it's an angel, or if it's actually not an angel, it's a woman holding water and offering soldiers well from a water in a war-torn country, and she can tell that they're World War I soldiers. And so she starts trying to find out who drew them and what the story is behind the sketchbook. And Death, meanwhile, takes on the case of a vet, who has been accused of murdering a member of the hate group that disrupted his wife's funeral. And this veteran has problems. He's traumatized, and he has no memory of what happened. The things that he does remember, they pass off as the defense attorneys think that he's just was imagining it because he's traumatized. The prosecuting attorney thinks that he's lying because it was premeditated murder. And he thinks that there's more to the story than they know. So the two cases are not specifically entwined, but they become connected as Death and Wren together work on them.
Interesting. So overall, your style in your books, again, you said they were more character-driven, and do you have more of a literary style, do you think?
Yeah, I think maybe. I don't know. I just try to write stories that will entertain people. I'm not trying to write the great American novel. Those usually wind up being really, really boring in my experience. I'm just trying to make people curious and make them want to know what happened next and make them care about the characters.
So they're more, they're whodunits.
They're whodunits, yes. And occasionally howdunits or whydunits.
Now, since you have a series here, I always ask this question. Is this one that someone could pick up your latest book, like pick up Death and the Gravedigger's Angel, and they'd understand it, or do they have to go back to the beginning?
I think they'd understand it. There's a few things they might miss out. There are little things that carry over from one to the other. But I think you could read one without reading the predecessors first. I'd like it if they read all of them, but
if someone wanted to jump in, if they just wanted to pick one book of yours, which one would you recommend?
Oh. Gosh, that's hard. Just ask me to pick my favorite child. Not that I actually go with that comparison of the whole books are my child thing, because children are way more annoying than books.
But to get the best feel for your characters.
To get the best feel for the characters. I think probably maybe the second book. If you read the third book first, there are going to be some spoilers for the second book. There's some things that happen in the second book that affect what goes on afterwards. So if you don't like spoilers, you're probably better off reading the first or second book first.
So jumping in at Death and the Brewmaster's Widow, that's a good spot to jump on board.
Yeah, and you can read the third book first, and you probably would understand it perfectly. It's just that if you do go back afterwards and read Beast and the Brewmaster's Widow, you're going to have some idea of what's going on that you wouldn't have if you hadn't read later books first.
Understood.
Is that confusing enough?
No, not at all. Again, that's always an important thing with series books is I don't think anyone likes one that makes it so you have to go all the way back to the beginning, especially when there's getting to be three or four or five of them. You know, you want them to be somewhat standalone. But if you want the full, all the details experience, then you can go back to the very first one. Like if I happen to stumble across The Gravedigger's Angel and enjoyed it, I wouldn't be totally lost. And then I could go back to book one and go, hey, this is awesome. So
I hope you'd go that, yeah.
Well, some of the things No, go ahead.
I was going to say, unless you were like my brother and you know, were too shocked by the naked dead guy.
Horde, I mean. So one thing that Kirkus said about your books is Ross's sleuthing pair again faces a present-day murder scene steeped in historical detail. Is that something you go for to add that historical twist to your books?
I'm not sure that I do it specifically to be historical, but I've done a lot of reading and research on local history, and there are so many things in the past that fascinate me that I wind up drawing them in because I find them interesting or, you know, evocative of a certain mood. The First World War and the way that people approached that in small towns and the way people were drawn together overseas in the war zone and then pulled apart because of things that were so vastly outside of their control. That, just as an example, is something that I feel touched by, so I'm going to bring that into the books. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so kind of drawing up a profile of who might like your books. It would be someone who is interested in small town life, who's interested in integrating history. That would be, you know, the finding the mysterious diary, finding the unidentified painting, that type of thing. Am I correct?
Yeah,
if that interests you, you'll like your books.
Yeah, I think so.
Someone who likes,
for curious people,
and someone who likes a whodunit rather than a, you know, big action-packed car chase with car chases and lots of guns. Like, oh, I don't know, my book.
Right. Hey, I love your books, and I love car chases and guns.
Well,
I spend
you.
A lot of time. My favorite like TV shows are always the really action packed buddy adventures. Not necessarily comedies, but buddy shows. And every, you know, if they get too bogged down in the drama, I'm always like, you know what this really needs? This really needs a gunfight. Something needs to blow up here.
Well, and there is action in your books. It just tends not to be of the gory variety. Am I right?
Right. One thing that I've tried to do is to make Deep and Wren both intelligent and competent people, and both of them to be compassionate people. A lot of times we see men are stereotyped as the big, dumb, muscular guy, or women are stereotyped as being kind of the dingbat who falls into trouble and just stumbles her way through it. And I don't actually know a lot of women like that. Most women I know can think their way through problems, and most men I know are intelligent enough to use their brain. One of the things, Deep's injury from his time in Afghanistan, he took a lot of shrapnel to his chest, and it left him with a severely damaged lung capacity. So he, if he tries to do a lot of physical activity, if he tries to get into a fight with somebody, he's going to lose because he's going to black out. He can't run long distances anymore, and he's a bit stubborn. He tries to do things he shouldn't, but he's not an idiot, and he knows that he doesn't have this physical capability that he had always been used to. So he has to compensate for that by using his head. He has to be smart his way out of problems more. And Ren is able to reason and also use her mind to come up with alternatives, you know, to come up with an escape route or whatever. But she's also not afraid to go, and she's not like a Valkyrie type or a, you know, an action heroine. She's like a girl next door, but if somebody's threatening someone she loves or if they're threatening her, she'll throw a punch. She does carry an atlatl, if you know what that is. Well, she carries it in the back of her truck, which she likes. She also has a slingshot. And the reason she has these is because she stumbled across them at auctions and thought they were cool. She likes trying to hit the target with them. And it's more like a game, but she can use them to defend herself and her family if she needs to.
And one of the things that the commenters, the couple of things they say about your books is that there's a fair amount of humor to them. Do you agree with that?
I don't try to make them funny, but people laugh at me a lot. So, I mean, I don't always try to be funny in real life, and they laugh at me, too, and I'm trying not to take it personally. But so, I don't know. I don't set out to be funny, but I've had people tell me that, too.
And that there's the banter. There's a lot of banter in your books, between the characters. And I think that's where some of the humor comes from.
That probably goes back to me watching way too many action adventure buddy shows, because they always have banter.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of picked that up in my dialogue.
Well, it seems to be working, because you have another one in the series coming out in February, right? And which
Deep
one is that?
Deep in the Viking's Daughter.
Deep in the
Viking's
Daughter?
Yeah. I wanted to call it the Skald's Daughter, but they said nobody knew what a Skald was, which is probably true.
So give me the 1-minute wrap-up on what that one's about.
Deep has been hired by a museum to try and find out who and how and why someone exchanged a not particularly valuable painting for a forgery. And while he's working in that case, Ren gets involved with a group of Viking reenactors. They're the Keystone Auction Company that she works for is preparing an old yacht club for auction, and two of the Keystone children find a bloody Viking costume in the loft, which may or may not be connected to the leader of the reenactment group's daughter, who disappeared in the 1970s when she was 17. So Ren gets involved in the case of this long-missing Viking girl. Well, you know, American girl who was the daughter of a Viking reenactor.
Of course, as one does.
That
sounds like a lot of fun. And you said that number 5 is on the drawing board?
It's on the drawing board. I'm working on it. And that,
does it have
a title? It has a working title. Whether it will keep that title or not in the publication, I don't know. But the title I'm going with right now is Deep and the Spinster's Diamond. And it's a baseball diamond.
Oh, that's right. This is your baseball one. Well, I can hardly wait to see that one too. And now, what's it like being part of Janet Reed's The Shark's Fabulosity?
There's a lot of fun authors that I've met through Janet. Bill Cameron and Jeff Summers, if you know both of them, I think.
Yes.
Yes, and Sean, help me out here. I'm having trouble remembering things that I know very well, and I feel bad I'm forgetting these people's names.
No, it's good. Sean Farrell.
Sean Farrell.
Yes. And she's just a lot of fun herself.
She is herself, yeah. She was lost. I only ran into her one time at Malice. She was so lost because they didn't have a bar in the hotel. And Janet
was
at the bar. You can always find Janet if she's not somewhere specific doing something specific. She hangs out at the bar. And they had no bar. They also only had two working elevators. Tiny, tiny elevators.
My book, Devil's Deal, came out of a conversation I had with Janet in a bar in Houston.
I think you've told me this, but tell me again.
Well, that's just basically it. We just started bantering the ideas back and forth, and she kept throwing ideas at me. And as I was driving home, I'm like, that'll never work in a million years. But wait, it might. And that's where my book came out of. So that's one of the great parts about running into her in the bar is that she's very generous about talking about ideas and looking over how many times have you slapped it. You know, I don't know how many times I've slapped something in front of her and she whips out a red pen. I don't know, she must keep it in her hair or something and starts marking it up right then and there. And that's just what makes her a lot of fun.
Every time I write something that really happened in one of my books, she makes me take it out for being unbelievable. I'll be like, no, that's based on a real person. She's like, yeah, I was afraid it was, but nobody's going to believe it anyway. You know, Patrick Lee punked me at a bar in Raleigh when we were having drinks with Janet. Mm-hmm. It was in 2015 when the Royals were on their way to the World Series, and I had gone... We were all sitting around a table, and I didn't realize until after I'd sat down that they had a TV that was showing the Royals playing the Houston Astros in, like, second game of the ALDS, I think. And I was trying to talk to them at the bar and turn my head and look up at the game and keep track of what was going on. And Patrick was sitting in the chair that was looking directly at the game, and he told me that Kendrys Morales hit a home run, and he hadn't. But we won, so it was okay. I forgave him. But, yeah, Patrick Lee's a punk. You know Patrick.
Oh, yes, I do. Patrick's a great guy, and I love his books, too. So, did you get to see the eclipse today?
I did. I was at my day job, which, as you know, is working in the produce department at Walmart. But we're right up by the front of the store, so we kept running outside. I got some actually halfway decent pictures on my camera.
You were nearly in totality, weren't you?
We were at 99.1%. We didn't get the awesome cool effects of, like, the corona, but it got pretty dark all of a sudden, and it was pretty cool. We were all standing around on the Walmart parking lot, pointing and looking at the sun and trying not to get run over. and I downloaded Total Eclipse of the Heart on my phone, and I played that during the eclipse. So,
of course you did.
I thought it was cool. Of course I did. Walmart
was
really into the eclipse. They were playing that over the intercom like five times today, and they played Walking on Sunshine, and they played Don't Mess Around with a Guy in Shades.
That's actually awesome. I got 96% here, which meant we didn't get a lot of the darkness, but it was suddenly like about the way the light is at about 6:30. You know, it was dusk all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And there were, I saw a few of the tree frogs were kind of going, you know, what? But of course, where I live, nobody would stop mowing their lawn for like 2 minutes to watch them, you know, to watch a natural miracle. So that kind of undercut the crickets and that type of thing. But it was still pretty darn cool, considering I thought we were going to be missed completely.
I did see your pictures. You had some very cool pictures.
Yes, instead of trying to have glasses and look at the sun or use a viewer, because my eyes are like super sensitive because I have bad allergies, I walked mm-hmm. around and I looked for the shadows, the moon shadows.
Uh-huh.
And found some really good ones.
I think that was really cool. We didn't have any trees because, you know, we were on a parking lot, but I really enjoyed looking at your pictures.
Well, and I found that, like, different kinds of trees put different kinds of shadows. It was very interesting.
And you were using a colander to cast the shadow of the moon on your car, on your van, right?
Oh, I did that at first, but even that was too much for my eyes. It was just too much white.
If you had a royal blue car, you'd have had a blue sun or a blue moon.
So is your next car going to be royal? Going to be royals blue?
Yes, that's what I'm looking for. People are like, "Well, what kind of car are you looking for?" I'm like, a blue one. I don't know anything beyond that.
In this part of the country, that shouldn't be too hard to find.
There are a few, not as many as you'd expect. I think I might have more luck if I go up more towards Kansas City. A lot of red cars.
Well, again, back on books. How many do you have an idea yet on how many auction block books there are going to be?
I don't know. No, just as long as they want me to keep writing them. I don't even know for a fact yet, for sure yet, if the fifth, which I think it probably will, but I don't know for a fact. But I'm working on that, and I have a couple other projects on the side that I'm working on. So.
Excellent.
Hopefully I can branch out and get some more. One that I call the ghost book, where the protagonist is actually the ghost of a murdered woman.
Excellent.
And I have one that I'm going to have to write under a pseudonym that's, again, about baseball. The protagonist in that one is the third base coach of a minor league ball team who thinks that this really, really unlikable superstar who is on a rehab assignment for another minor league team, he thinks that somebody's trying to kill him, but nobody will take my main character seriously because at the beginning of the book, he gets hit in the head with a foul ball. And
well,
so he tells them, you know.
If anybody can write baseball into these mysteries, it's you. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So just to summarize things, you've got the three auction block books out right now. The fourth
mm-hmm.
one, which is Deep in the Viking's Daughter, that's going to be out in February of 2018.
Yep.
And then number five is on the drawing board, so we don't have any sort of information about it. You're still working on that one.
I'm still working on that one.
Okay, well, that's fantastic. And I have a couple of announcements I need to make to wrap this up, but I want to thank you a million for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me.
And then maybe we'll see you back in the spring after your new book comes out.
I'll see you it'll be a while, but I hope to see you in Florida next year too, in person.
Well, we've got to do something before then, for sure, cuz my gosh, we only live a few hours apart. So, but I will be talking to you. And again, thanks a lot for coming in, and I really appreciate it. And you have a good night.
You too, and thank you. Have a good night.
And if you enjoyed this broadcast, it was made possible by Down and Out Books, celebrating 6 years of award-winning crime fiction. You can check them out at www.downandoutbooks.com. This broadcast is owned and copyrighted by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC, and you can follow the Blue Plate Special on Facebook to keep up with who is on the menu. Good night, everybody, and we'll see you next week.